Yeah, now that was weird. I had an incoming call and then I had a second incoming call. So, hello.
Hello.
And you can hear me all right?
Oh yeah, you're all good.
Excellent. We have cracked yet another aspect of the Skype code. Hello, people and ladies and gentlemen, germs, folks, humans, non-humans. If anyone's listening to the show in pony mode, or in puppy mode, because you are entirely welcome to do that. This is
Whatever
Melina.
mode you like.
Yeah.
Pick your mode.
Pick
We
your
are
mode.
mode agnostic here.
And so welcome to episode 7, I think. We have to give the show disclaimers. I am dog sitting. And so Pip is having an exciting personal moment with his tube monkey that he is running
That
around and playing
is,
with.
and that is not a euphemism.
No, it's not a euphemism. It's actually a tube-shaped monkey.
All right.
So yeah, I should like post this in the show notes. Pip and his tube monkey.
I have a feeling that actually a photograph of Pip and the Tube Monkey would be
Oh my God, that's a grunge band name if there ever was one. Come on. Pip and the Tube
Pip and the
Monkey.
Tube Monkey.
And you know what? That is totally a very British thing because you got the whole Pip, thing, and then you've got the whole tube thing. So my British grunge band. Okay, you know what? Can you hear the Tube Monkey squeaking now?
Oh yeah.
Oh my fucking God.
No, it's great. It's great. It's great. It's like the strangest kind of musical accompaniment. What's happening right there? What's happening right there? And it's like Creative Commons, right? No copyright. That is the theme song now to Conversations with the Perverted
Conversation with the
Negress.
Preferred Negress, featuring Pip and the Tube Monkey, because that is how we fucking roll.
That is perfect.
So,
So while you have Pip and the Tube Monkey down there, I'm up here in Toronto with my roommate Coco, who's currently curled up very quietly at the foot of my bed, pointedly ignoring me because that's what cats do.
Because you're not paying attention to me, fucker, so fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much the cat's dance on things. And as it should be, because really it is all about them, our feline overlords, taking up huge swaths of bandwidth on the intertubes. So what I wanted to talk about today was a little bit. See, this is just going to make me nuts. I can't.
No, it's all good.
I can't deprive Pip of the tube monkey though, because it's his little guy. So when I was on the Dan Savage podcast, which is super awesome, and I'll put a link to that if you have not heard me on it, which is a high point in my online community career, because I've been reading Dan Savage since I was a wee high school tot, opening the back page of the Village Voice every Thursday, I think it was, to see the "Hey, faggot"
Yep.
column that he would write, and we would just sit in the schoolyard being like, "Oh my God, Dan Savage is so fucking awesome," and he's still awesome, and over the years, of course, you have your disagreements about various whatnot and this and that and everything, but he has a lot of cool stuff to say and invited me on as an expert about the kinks, and I posted, I was like, "Oh my God, I'm gonna be in Dan Savage," and someone responded to one of my posts somewhere, I think it was on FetLife, and said, "Oh gosh, I hope you get to answer the question that I wrote into him." And I did not, but the question that this person had posted, they'd sent him an email asking him a particular question, and I did not answer it on his podcast, but I thought how cool to address that here. And the question basically was, this person's in a relationship with another kinky individual. And they do not have shared kinks, and or there's a central kink that's important to the querent that was not shared by their partner, and how do they handle that? What should they do about that? And I was like, wow, that's a really interesting question. Now, I didn't have a great deal of detail on it because there's a couple of key secondary questions I would ask, and but since we don't know the answer, we will address as many potentialities as possible. as to what you do if you are in love with or engaged with a person who you care about very much. And you have core kinks that are not being met by that other person, right? So what do you do with it? What do you do, man? What do you do? And of course, the first question I would need to ask is, okay, so how much freedom do you have to have that need met outside of your relationship, right?
Yeah,
because of course, that's the first thing that perverts are like, well, you know, if you're poly, you can.
Yeah, or as Dan Savage might put it, monogamish.
Yes,
is the other way of approaching that. But right. That's true. Yeah, I would want to ask about what framework, what degree of open framework does their relationship exist in?
Right, because you know it's interesting when I first came into the kink community back in, like, officially, my official sort of like, yes, I'm here outside of, you know, my own comfort zone doing kinky stuff, which would be, I'd say, 96, 97 in there. I had this assumption that I was this dominant person and then I would have a relationship and then we'd be together and that would be how it went. And I discovered that, especially in the Bay Area, there were so many people who were at the very least non-monogamous, if not very poly. And mm-hmm. and so if you had a situation where you really loved flogging and your partner had no interest in it, there was almost nothing stopping most of us from going, okay, well, I'm just going to go and find someone else to flog me. I'll see you next Friday. And so that was sort of the accepted norm, you know? So when the person asks, what do I do if my partner has a don't share a kink, you know, my suspicion is that the person who is non-monogamous wouldn't ask that question. My gut on this is that this is a person who is to some extent monogamous or heart monogamous or deeply pair bonded in some way, because if you were poly, why would you ask that question?
Well, you could ask the question if you were if you were in a non-monogamous relationship, mm-hmm. but that it was vitally important to your partner that this particular kink be reserved, as some people like to do in terms of in non-monogamous structures, if your non-monogamous structure works in a sort of primary, secondary kind of hierarchical model, mm-hmm. then there can be, you can have people for whom it's important to keep certain kinds of kinks inside the primary relationship.
Right.
As an indicator of that primacy.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have people for whom, let's say that you have a couple, person A, person B, and they are primary partners, and person A is, let's say, very pulled towards, that person A is a decent person who is very pulled towards the owning someone.
Right.
And person B may be an S type person, but on more of a, let's say that it's that their particular S type exists on more of a masochism spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and not
mm-hmm.
so much of a relinquishing of power, right? Or a relinquishing of control. So they're not necessarily a submissive or a submissive or slave property minded person, but there is somebody who enjoys getting beat.
Sure.
In that case, you could have the, and maybe person B, the masochist person, is like, oh no, that's okay. You can go engage in ownership with somebody outside of our relationship. I'm cool with that.
Right.
But person A is like, no, this, I want this to be part of my primary relationship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, you still can have that compatibility issue, or that the idea that there are some things specifically to be reserved for or exclusively a part of your primary central relationship.
Right.
I think that's an even thornier thicket.
Yes, for sure. And I think at the moment it's probably better to just, I'm just going to reach into my bedside drawer here and I'm going to pull out Occam's razor and I'm going to say, probably the scenario that I came up with is not what the person who's asking the question, it's not the scenario that they're in.
It might not be. And the thing is that this begs the question of, the root of the issue is, how is it a deal breaker or not? How much are you willing to compromise? And when does compromise become something that damages or imperils your core drive or your core need, you know? I will say, for example, in the past long time, you know, probably decade plus, the most successful relationship I've had was with someone who did not identify as kinky at all. We're not a part of the scene, very aware of it, you know, had friends who were kinky, had friends who were pro-doms. He was the legendary, famous, and epic pizza guy. May he rest in peace. He sadly passed away last year. And one of the things about that relationship that worked remarkably well was that, despite the fact that he was like, I'm not a pervert, I'm not kinky, but did shit in the bedroom that, like, to this day, like, I talk to kinky people about it, they're like, whoa, that's advanced level shit. I'm like, I know. But he did not consider himself to be that. So his absolute lack of interest in being involved in the larger community, which up to that point I had been deeply involved in, was not a deal breaker. I'm not an exhibitionist, so I did not have to go to play parties to play. My social life was not exclusively rooted in the kink and SM confederacies. So I was, you know, doing theater stuff and doing art stuff and doing performance stuff. And so I was spread out all over the place. So having a shift in my social arena was not that big of a deal. There's some folks who are, you know, would turn up their nose at the idea of dating a quote unquote vanilla. And so for them, that would be a deal breaker. So when you're looking at various levels of kinks, I think having to take into account, is this something that I do because it gets me off and I enjoy it? Or is it something that I need in order to have a fulfilling relationship? And without it, I can't even go there.
Right.
And having to make that decision, I think, is going to be at the root of whether or not you have success in navigating that, you know?
Well, yes. And I think for me, this is more of an argument in favor of full and complete disclosure relatively early on.
Yep. And a really powerful sense of your own needs, wants, and desires, and honesty and self-assessment.
Yeah.
And valuing yourself, like, as highly as you possibly can, because so often people do not honor their own needs. And so you get shit like, oh, well, that's not that important, because, you know, you are driven by fear and hunger and loneliness.
Right. Yes, for sure. But, and for me, this speaks to one of my sort of core life rules, which is, nobody else should ever be allowed to determine the value that a thing holds for you.
Mm-hmm.
You are the only person who can determine the value of something for you.
Yeah.
Or lack of value, right? Mm-hmm. Like, nobody else gets to tell you that that something is important to you. Right. Somebody will tell you that it should be. Somebody could give you arguments as to why it should be. Some people can try to convince you, but they don't get to make that decision for you.
No.
And I recognize in saying that that is outside of a context within which decision making. No, you know what? Fuck that. Even inside of a context where decision making is out of someone's hands, you still determine for yourself the value of a thing. You
right.
have a secondary level of value that you determine, which is, do I value, does the value that I hold, does the value that I put on following this directive outweigh the lack of value that I hold towards the focus of the directive?
What is an example of that?
So if I was trying to do something really base, I would say,
if you were,
if I was. I'm gonna try to get real bass. If I was, I would say something like this. I could give a shit about the state of my boots. But if given a directive to maintain the state of my boots, the value that I place on fulfilling the directive outweighs the lack of value that I place on my boots being shiny.
Right. And there you go. And that is a piece of the puzzle to the whole, like, well, how do I deal with this with a partner, you know?
Yes.
And the dynamic is going to be important in this, because if you, for example, are a submissive or slave type person, then probably some of what you're modeling is, hey, this is important to me because it's important to my dominant or master. I would suggest that a compassionate dominant master or owner would have a similar desire to make sure that the needs, wants, and desires of their submissive or bottom were met to the best of their ability and their own personal emotional health, right? That you need to have that be an aspect of it. What's interesting in this question to me, in addition to that, which is a really salient point, is the idea of whether or not, you know, once you have decided what things are valuable to you, what you are willing to sacrifice, how much of those things you're willing to sacrifice in order to have the relationship, you know. And again, this is a thing that only you can decide. And that's part of the reason why I'm always, my jaw drops a little bit when I hear about people who meet folks and are collared and owned by them in like 6 months. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that's not a lot of time to get to know someone and then expose them to your deepest vulnerabilities or to take that degree of responsibility for them. Because until you engage with that person on their terms and they engage with you on your terms, you're just often not going to know what those core things are. And there's some core things that shift and change over time. You know, and if this person, for example, is engaged in a relationship with someone and 2 years in, they wake up one morning, they're like, you know what I really need to do is I need to be a dog some days. I need to do dog puppy stuff. And the other partner is like, I have no interest in that. And I think it's weird. Now, is this desire for dog puppy stuff going to push you to the point where you would be willing to give up that relationship? If the other person is not willing to provide you with it, or will it just sort of be something that's sort of a little, you know, a little sad making? You get the sad trombone every time you think about it, and you kind of put it away in your drawer for a wank fodder fantasy stuff and leave it at that.
Right. Yes, I understand. And I agree that core things change. I question the idea, though, if we're talking about two kinky people. Mm-hmm. That suddenly 2 years down the road, one of those kinky people is going to suddenly wake up and say, I got to be a dog for you, and have that sort of come out of nowhere.
It might not be for them. It would be for themselves is my thought. Like,
to be more clear, if we're talking about an idea of a couple for whom engaging with each other in a let's just say in a closed relationship structure, right? So person A in this case wakes up 2 years into a kinky relationship and says, I really want to be your dog. And it's not just that I want to be a dog, it's that I want to be your dog. Because the original question was, how do you manage your partner having a kink that really doesn't work for you?
Right. And if you're in a relationship where seeking that outside the relationship is not a point, the for you part is less important first than the this is what I want to do. You know, the initial thing is going to be, well, I really want to do this. And if you have the capacity to go outside, then you're going to be like, oh, well, it doesn't have to be for you. It'd be for this other person.
Yes.
If you're in that more restricted relationship, that more closed relationship where you're not able to go and get that knee bent outside, you're going to have to look at it being for that person because that's the person who you've mutually chosen to be with. And yes. So the idea, I think the problem becomes if the other person is unwilling for whatever reason to engage at that point.
And there's degrees of unwilling, right? There's like, I don't get it. There's that gives me a little bit of squick. All the way up to I am vehemently opposed, like hard ass limit right here.
Yeah.
You being a dog. So, but the thing with something being a hard limit like that, it sort of gets back to the same thing of somebody waking up 2 years into a relationship and then coming out with I want to be a dog. Because we are talking about two kinky people in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
I would like to think.
Are you having hope in humanity again?
You know, I don't know what's happening, because when I was about 4 or 5 years old, my parents actually paid for this really kind of groundbreaking and relatively expensive operation. And I mean, it's in Canada, so you know that you have to pay for it. It's something that's because, you know, the general healthcare doesn't cover this particular procedure. Uh-huh. And I actually had my hope removed. and it's made life way easier. So I feel like maybe what's happening now is there's like a bit of a relapse or something. Best,
a few cells were left. You had like hope exactly. Stem cells.
Anyway, what I was going to say, yes, I suppose it actually does have to do a little bit with hope. But what I was going to say was I would like to think that there would be enough open communication and discussion between these two people that as the interests of one partner drifted towards the canine, that the other partner would be part of that exploration.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
And I recognize that it's not always going to be the case.
That would be great. And again, a lot of this stuff doesn't just happen overnight. I'm being a bit facetious, you know. I use the example of that because it is one of the less, you know, flat controversial and just sort of like forehead wrinkling fetishes that people sort of, you know, get or don't get.
Yeah.
And the idea that you could say, well, I don't know what that would be like, but okay, sure, I'll give it a shot, versus someone just coming right out and saying, oh my God, no way. And again, it's going to be, I think, a degree of how much the other person in a relationship is willing to be flexible. Mm-hmm. I am all for flexibility, mostly just because I've discovered in my life that when I shrug my shoulders and say, fuck it, and try shit, 9 times out of 10, I learn something very important about the person who has introduced this into my life. And 100% of the time, I learn something important about myself. And I think that that's extremely valuable, first and foremost. To answer that question sort of in a more direct way, I would say to the person, you really have to make an assessment as to what the value is for you on that kink if the person is not willing to engage in it. And take a look at that and say, okay, is this a deal breaker, or is this something without which I may live and still have a good quality of life in a way that's going to keep you happy and feeling good about shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it varies. You know, for me, for example, like as I mentioned with the example with the pizza guy, we had a really great relationship, and you know, he was not really interested in going to kink events and doing two-purpose kink stuff. Did we have a very kinky sex life? Yes. Was he a bit of a 50s era throwback in terms of his politics around how men and women should be in relationships? Absolutely. Did that work in a DS context? Sure it did. You know, I did not have to be specifically called his submissive to know that he thought that the man was the king of the castle and, you know, he wanted to have his slippers and newspaper when he got home.
Right.
And I was like, that's really great. So in that way, we had that compromise, and everyone was happy, which worked out very well for, you know, a few years.
Yeah, no, I get that. I had my last long-term partner, long-term partner, was somebody who, in over conversations between her and I, we sort of came to the conclusion that she would probably best identify as a hard masochistic bottom.
Mm-hmm.
She liked intense sensation. She liked pain. She liked endurance.
She really liked rope, which was great for me. What she wasn't at all really was submissive. Yeah. So if I could beat on her for a really long time, but if I was to say to her, get on your knees, her response would be like, no. Like, it was, so it, that just wasn't like it, the power exchange aspect wasn't there.
Right.
That relationship,
but that obviously wasn't a deal breaker for you,
no,
for that relationship.
That's exactly that particular relationship. That was the framework that that relationship took. And I would not expect her, or even really in that case, I would not have wanted her to pretend to be submissive to fulfill some kind of need for me, because I would recognize that it wasn't a genuine internally driven desire.
Right. And that's I think going to be germane to the question as well, is that what it, let us say, you know, you have the first layer, which is, you know, the person not willing to compromise. And then you have to make a decision about whether or not the fetish is so overwhelming that it will be a spoiler for the relationship. And then you have the second layer, as you say, which is this compromise going to be one that's made outside of authenticity? You know, if someone in your relationship is not at all into power exchange and you're like, I really need to submit to you. And you're just like, okay, I'll do it for you, honey. And you're sitting there and they're crawling around and offering you service. And you're like, that's great. Mm-hmm, sure. Bring me a sandwich. And there's nothing behind it or grounding it or motivating it. Is that going to be an okay compromise for you? And for some people it might.
Yeah. I was going to say that there are some people for whom the appearance of a thing, mm-hmm, is good enough.
Right. Right. You know, if, for example, you are with someone who is not into rope, but your need for rope is so awesome and so profound that you're just like, look, I don't care if you like it, just please tie me up, because the headspace that I get is very vital to me. And if the person's sort of like rolling their eyes and going, okay, fine, here's your hog tie, you know, but then you're in the hog tie, and you've gotten that need met, that might be fine for some folks, as long as the other person, if the impact on the other person is neutral.
Right. Now, that's the other thing, too, is that if the other person is, as, and I could sort of picture your face as you were sort of rolling your eyes, okay, I'll put you in the rope. Like, if that's the reaction, if your request is being met with scorn and or derision, then,
and you're not into the humiliation play.
And you're not into the humiliation thing. Then, like, that's another problem. So,
yeah.
So that's another thing that I would want to ask that I would want to find out from this person is this disconnect between you and your partner's kink, is it a source of contention?
Right.
Like, is it a pain point, or is it just like, I would really like my cis male partner to wear women's underthings and he won't.
Right. Or is it like, I want my partner to do this, and if they don't, I can't get it up for them. I can't get it wet. It doesn't get my parts tingling.
Yeah.
You know, which is its own whole frickin' thing.
But that's also, I mean, that's, and this is interesting too, because then it brings up the question of how much is sexual arousal a key part of your kink,
mm-hmm,
a key requirement of your kink, because it isn't for everybody.
I know. It's true.
Which on one hand I get, and on one hand I don't. Like, I can see both sides of it, because there are, there are times when I can feel kink. I can feel erotically satiated without being sexually satiated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Oh my fucking God, it's at 29 minutes. Dude.
Okay, shall we just wrap this then?
All right, so we have to wrap this up with something, but I really want to talk about the thing that we just said about the erotic thing
the erotic satiation versus sexual satiation.
Yeah, and whether or not as a person's king. Okay, so we're going to wrap up this episode. So we kind of answered the question, sort of. So going forward, if you listen to this and you're like, hey, I have a question, please tap the little envelope there on the right side of your screen and send a question, and we will do our best to kind of answer it and then talk about something else.
As we seem to do.